Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in the next 2 half-hour segments, we're going to review some material from Mike Rupert's From the Wilderness newsletter, and we're going to update a fascinating story about a lawsuit that has been filed, even as most of the United States and a fair amount of the rest of the world is paying attention to the Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky follies, themselves an offshoot from a legal standpoint of the Paula Jones lawsuit. A very much more important and, at least to me, much more interesting lawsuit, which also could conceivably wash on shores occupied by Bill Clinton, among others, is winding its way through the American legal system with very, very little notice. Mike Rupert is a former Los Angeles Police Department narcotics detective who, while serving with LAPD, came across evidence of involvement of elements of the Central Intelligence Agency in drug trafficking. This, for Mike Rupert, keyed a lifelong crusade to try to interdict those elements of the intelligence community that are involved in drug trafficking. And one of the fruits of Mike's crusade has been a very important newsletter that he puts out called From the Wilderness. From the Wilderness gets my 5-star rating. Its focus is relatively narrow. It focuses on the intelligence community's involvement in drug trafficking and related matters. However, on that particular subject, one that I covered many years ago and have not covered very much lately, it's an extremely well-done newsletter and has some absolutely vital information. You can contact Mike Rupert and obtain a subscription to From the Wilderness at P.O. Box 6061-350. That's Box 6061-350, Sherman Oaks, California, 91413. That's P.O. Box 6061-350, Sherman Oaks, California, 91413. By email, you can reach Mike Rupert at mrupert, M-R-U-P-P-E-R-T, one word, at copvcia.com. That also is one word, that's two words there, at copvcia.com. Email again, mrupert at copvcia.com. His website is www.copvcia.com, www.copvcia.com. And the phone and fax numbers, both in the 818 area code, the phone number is 788-8791. That's 788-8791. And the fax number is 981-2847. Both of those, again, in the 818 area code. We can't give prices on the air. Suffice it to say that a year's subscription to From the Wilderness is more than worth it and is under $30. And again, I should stress that I get no monies or compensation from Mike Rupert in connection with this. As far as I'm concerned, the compensation is his heroic efforts and self-sacrificing efforts in bringing out the truth concerning the matters that he discusses. We're going to review a couple of pieces concerning a lawsuit that's going on. This concerns a lawsuit filed by a former Special Forces operative, and something both the lawsuit and the career of that former Special Forces operative discussed at considerable detail in a previous pair of half-hour segments dealing with material from Mike Rupert's newsletter. The April 25, 1998 issue of From the Wilderness discussed the case of Bill Tyree, a Special Forces veteran who was involved in allegedly involved in some CIA covert operations that involved drug trafficking. I'm going to very quickly reread this article by way of review for people who are not familiar with the basics of the case. Then I'm going to reread an article also read in those 2 half-hour segments about Albert Vincent Caron. Then I'm going to read a long article in the most recent issue of From the Wilderness, updating information about that lawsuit, including evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of Mena, Arkansas, and the assassination of President Kennedy. From the April 25, 1998 issue of From the Wilderness, we read the following. This article is entitled Military Role in Drug Dealing to be Discussed in Upcoming A&E Program. That was upcoming as of 4/25/98. Special Forces vet Bill Tyree making legal moves to upset 1979 murder conviction based on CIA ops. This article reads, and again, this is for by way of review for the veteran listener. For 19 years, Bill Tyree, a U.S. Army Special Forces veteran and political prisoner, has sat in Massachusetts Walpole Prison, wrongly convicted of the murder of his own wife. To many in the struggle to expose CIA involvement in drug trafficking, he has become an icon of injustice and his freedom a personal goal. His story is the subject of an upcoming segment of investigative reports with Bill Curtis, scheduled to air on A&E on June 13, 1998 at 9 p.m. Eastern. By the way, that, of course, as I speak, in late September of 1998 has already aired. Continuing, in another recent surprise, Senator Ted Kennedy has written to federal officials asking for a review of Tyree's case on grounds that his rights were violated in his trial 19 years ago. In the mid-1970s, Bill Tyree and other U.S. Army Special Forces troops under the command of Colonels Ed Cutolo, Bo Baker, and others were ordered to enter Colombia and plant radio transponders so that CIA flights laden with cocaine could fly below radar into Albrook Field in Panama, where they were met by the likes of Manuel Noriega and Ed Wilson. These operations, known as the Watchtower missions, evolved over time into a more draconian program known as Operation Orwell, which was conducted in part from Fort Devens, Massachusetts. Devens was the home of the 10th Special Forces Group, commanded by Cutolo. The purpose of Orwell was to conduct massive domestic surveillance on political figures and police to keep knowledge of the drug operations secret. These activities have been described in an affidavit known as the Cutolo Affidavit, which has been widely circulated among opponents of CIA drug trafficking. Although not written by Cutolo, the affidavit has withstood numerous vettings and is now supported by hundreds of pages of additional affidavits, court documents, and written statements. From the Wilderness is in possession of those documents and is making preparations to make them available to readers. One of these documents is an admission from CIA that the Watchtower missions occurred and that CIA has Watchtower documents that they are refusing to release. After becoming disheartened in 1978, Bill Tyree became a security risk. His wife, Elaine, who was keeping a diary, was murdered. Bill Tyree was framed for that murder, even though there were witnesses who saw the real killers emerge from his bedroom, and there were other witnesses who gave Tyree a perfect alibi. Tyree's arrest was initially thrown out by a local judge, but a young assistant district attorney, John Kerry, picked up the case and refiled it. In an unusual move, the Massachusetts State Supreme Judicial Court took the case and would let no other court hear it. Tyree was convicted shortly thereafter. At the time of his arrest, a number of personal items with evidentiary value, such as notebooks, uniforms, and other personal effects, were taken, and they have not surfaced since. They are still in the custody of Massachusetts authorities. They would help Tyree establish his innocence. In spite of numerous requests and a legal responsibility to do so, the courts and the prosecutors have never given Tyree back his belongings. On April 29th, Tyree will have a court hearing asking for the presence of Kerry, now the junior senator from Massachusetts, and the current district attorney to answer charges of receiving stolen property. Kerry, as many of you know, chaired the oft-quoted Senate hearings in 1986 and 7, which documented much of CIA's role in the Iran-Contra-era drug trade. His role in Tyree's case remains a mystery to many of us. Tyree's attorney, Ray Coleman, a law partner of William Pepper, who was representing the late James Earl Ray, is optimistic that one day Tyree will walk out a free man. I agree, if Bill can remain intact long enough. Recent optimism has been dampened by several recent food poisonings of Tyree, which have been followed by punishments for his inability to report to work. There are also rumors that Tyree may soon be transferred to another prison, where one of the soldiers involved in killing his wife is serving time on another conviction. You can write to Bill Tyree at P.O. Box 100, South Walpole, Massachusetts, 02071. And Mike adds, let's hope that the prison authorities get the message that we're watching. Hang tough, Bill. Forever brothers. That's, again, by way of review for veteran listeners, as is the following. That from the Wilderness issue of 4/25/98. And this is from the Wilderness issue of June 21st. Of 1998. Now, again, this is also by way of review, and this is another of the key figures in this case, a fellow named Albert Vincent Caron. The article's headlined, Albert Vincent Caron, NYPD, CIA, Mafia? A deepening paper trail says yes to all three for Oliver North's bill payer. The article reads, doesn't it seem strange that an investigative summary I wrote in 1994 is now the official military record of a man who died in 1990, and who the Army says is still on active duty? With more than 50 pages of hard documentation, I was able to reconstruct the life and times of a CIA operative who was undercover at NYPD for 20 years, whose brother did LSD research for the CIA, and who, when his daughter got married, had separate reception rooms for the Mafia and NYPD and CIA. among the mafia guests at the wedding were Santo Trafficante and Paulie Castellano. According to several members of Caron's family, the names of North, Secord, Bush, Casey, Abrams, and many other familiar names were household words before Caron died of, quote, chemical toxicity of unknown etiology, unquote, in 1990. Is there documentation to support this? Absolutely. Among other things, Caron's personal phone book lists the home addresses and telephone numbers of CIA Director William Casey and Gambino crime boss Paulie Castellano on the same page. I have held it in my hands. Increasing evidence, some of it recently obtained from Europe, confirms that Caron traveled about the world in conjunction with his partner, James Robert Strauss, dispersing drug profits to pay for all the covert operations being simultaneously run by Ali North and George Bush. Travel documents in my possession, and which are a part of my official Caron report, show that sometimes, as often as every other day, Strauss, who was a local insurance broker in New Mexico, made trips to London, Hong Kong, Jeddah, Kuala Lumpur, Jakarta, New Orleans, the Bahamas, Tehran, Lisbon, Paris, Sydney, Durban, Johannesburg, and many other cities. In the last year, I have obtained statements from insurance executives who worked with and then fired Strauss because of his ongoing involvement with drugs and unexplained absences. Caron, who had been a CIA bagman and connected with the French Connection and Prince of the City cases, would routinely leave duties as an NYPD detective in the 1970s, don the uniform of an Army major, and hop military flights all over the world. After retiring and moving to New Mexico in 1980, he continued these efforts at a frenzied pace, laundering and dispersing CIA's cocaine profits all over the world by his own words, quote, at the direction of Oliver North, unquote, who, he said, used the alias John Caffey. Some of Caron's other personal records show a close relationship to almost every board member of the CIA drug bank Nugan Hand, and grow even more detailed on the subject of CIA's longtime money handler Paul Helliwell. Sources in Britain tell me that one of those projects was for the ostensible task of recovering U.S. POWs held in Russia. In early 1997, when Oliver North appeared live on CNN with talk show host Joe Madison, who was doing a terrific job of keeping the drug story hot, Ali blatantly challenged Madison or anyone to, quote, tell me where the money went, unquote. I was instantly on the call-in line, but could not get through. Maybe next time. It is now a fairly well-documented story that DEA agent Kiki Camarena was murdered while chasing down the CIA-protected drug ring of Miguel Felix Gallardo and Rafael Caro Quintero. Caron returned from Mexico in 1985, at the same time Kiki was murdered, and told his family that he had lost his stomach for covert work because a DEA agent had been murdered as a result of his CIA operations. It was shortly after that that Caron became ill and started babbling to his family, who were careful to secrete key records. What becomes still more interesting about Caron is that immediately after his death, all official records on him disappeared from the New York Police Department, the Army, and even the New Mexico Department of Motor Vehicles. Simply stated, he never existed after World War II. Forget that I have photographs of him in uniform as both a major and a full colonel. Caron was buried in a New Mexico military cemetery with the rank of staff sergeant. His pensions and bank accounts disappeared. His driver's license disappeared, and even his life insurance policies disappeared. When I first met with the family, I advised them that to my knowledge there was only one person who could help them. That was none other than the infamous CIA blonde ghost, Ted Shackley, who had been a principal in every CIA covert operation from the Bay of Pigs through Iran-Contra. Always, where the CIA has touched drugs, one finds Shackley's footprints. Less than 10 days after Caron's daughter contacted Shackley, his headstone was changed from staff sergeant to full colonel. No monies were returned, but Shackley did quite clearly admit to having known Caron. Now, consider these additional facts. The daughter of Colonel Ed Cutolo of the Cutolo Affidavit instantly recognized a photograph of Al Caron as a frequent visitor to her childhood home. Bill Tyree states that not only did he know Caron, but he worked with Caron on many CIA missions, and that Caron was, quote, the paymaster, unquote, for those missions. The circles grow closer and closer because, as time will tell, the people who have stolen our government are a very small circle indeed. Oh, and by the way, the reason that the Army lists a dead man as still being on active duty is that because as long as they show him as living, all of his records, including my report, which is now his official military history, are exempt from disclosure. Again, that like the article on Bill Tyree, by way of review for veteran listeners. Now, in the aforementioned, oh, by the way, for background on Theodore Shackley, the Iran-Contra scandal and some of the drug smuggling connections to same, RFA programs 29 through 34, available from Spitfire, go into some of the, not only go into the Iran-Contra scandal at great length, but the drug connections as well. There's also a miscellaneous archive show available from Spitfire called The Wild Wild West, which also talks about some of the many Iran-Contra-related drug connections. At the during the concluding 10 minutes or so of the aforementioned pair of half-hour segments that featured Mike Rupert's information from the wilderness, we discussed a lawsuit that was filed on Friday, September 4th of 1998 against, among others, George Bush and the CIA et al. And what we're going to do right now is to update that lawsuit. We're going to read now from the latest edition of the, or latest issue, I should say, of From the Wilderness. That issue is September 19th, 1998. And I'm speaking on the evening of Sunday, September 27th, 1998, for the benefit of those who eventually hear this program on tape. And I'm going to read into the record in its entirety a long article updating this very, very, very important lawsuit. Again, reading from the 9/1998 issue of From the Wilderness, we read the following. The headline of the article is actually sort of a replication of the filing in this particular lawsuit. It's called Speaking of Headshots, $63 million federal lawsuit filed against George Bush, CIA, Chip Tatum, and Massachusetts officials by former Green Beret Bill Tyree. Suit links Albert Caron to missing diaries and cover-up by state officials and U.S. government. It was filed in the United States District Court, District of Massachusetts. Its filing number is 98-CY-11829-JLT. William M. Tyree, T-Y-R-E-E, Plaintiff, versus Central Intelligence Agency, L. Scott Harshbarger, A. Paul Cellucci, George Bush, Dois Gene Tatum, Defendants. The article reads, Bill Tyree, the former U.S. Army Green Beret who participated in CIA-directed missions to smuggle cocaine into Panama in 1975 and 6, and who has been serving a life sentence in Massachusetts for the 1979 murder of his wife Elaine, has filed a $63 million lawsuit in U.S. District Court charging that the CIA, George Bush, the Massachusetts governor and attorney general, and longtime CIA operative Dois G. Chip Tatum have been part of a decades-long conspiracy to smuggle drugs into the United States. The suit also alleges that the defendants, including George Bush, have directly participated in a conspiracy to obstruct justice, conceal evidence, and engaged in theft to keep a set of diaries maintained by Elaine Tyree, which would prove both Tyree's innocence and the CIA conspiracy from falling into Tyree's possession. This is in spite of previous court findings that initial searches of Tyree's residence by Massachusetts authorities after the murder were illegal and that removal of the diaries constituted theft of personal property. The suit further alleges that the defendants have used the monies generated from those activities to fund a host of illegal operations which have violated the Constitution. The initial filing in the case, more than 100 pages long and supported by 5 inches of supporting documents, touches upon issues ranging from Iran-Contra drug trafficking to MENA, Arkansas, to political fundraising, to FEMA, that's the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and to the assassination of John F. Kennedy. By the way, I should add before we proceed with this blockbuster article that neither myself nor any of the stations that broadcast this program are in possession of any evidence incriminating any of these individuals in this particular case. So I will refer to the charges made here as allegations. That's not in any way to cast aspersions on the defendants or Mike Rupert, whom, again, I consider to be an American hero in the truest sense of the word, but rather not possessing any information incriminating any of these individuals in any of these activities, and saying the same for the stations that I broadcast on. I'm simply obligated to make that statement. And as far as I know, none of the defendants has ever been convicted of a crime. Continuing with this article, now bear in mind, repeating the last sentence, the initial filing in the case, more than 100 pages long and supported by 5 inches of supporting documents, touches issues ranging from Iran-Contra drug trafficking to MENA, Arkansas, to political fundraising, to FEMA, to the assassination of John F. Kennedy. Tyree, who served first with the 7th and later the 10th Special Forces at Fort Devens, Massachusetts, participated in CIA missions using Special Forces troops to infiltrate Colombia to plant navigational aids for cocaine flights into Panama in 1975 and 1976. Tyree and others who have submitted affidavits watched the planes being unloaded by the likes of Manuel Noriega, CIA officer Ed Wilson, and Israeli Mossad agent Mike Harari. By the way, we've dealt with many of these people in numerous archive shows. I refer interested listeners to RFA number 4, entitled Wilson, Turple and Company, about the many activities of Ed Wilson and Frank Turple, and some of their associates, such as the aforementioned Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins, another high-ranking CIA covert ops veteran. Proceeding with this article. In 1977 and 1978, Tyree engaged in illegal domestic surveillance and blackmail operations from Fort Devens, which were designed to conceal the earlier missions. He became disenchanted with the work and asked for a transfer. At the same time, his wife Elaine, also in the Army, became an informant for the Army's Criminal Investigation Division, or CID, and began recording details of illegal operations in a set of diaries. She was murdered with a hunting knife in their apartment a short time later, and her diaries disappeared. Tyree has steadfastly maintained his innocence, and over the years, an increasing body of evidence has surfaced to support his claims. At first blush, such a broad sweep for a civil action seems unjustified and even ill-conceived. However, a close reading of the complaint reveals a distinct connection between the disparate elements in the form of Albert Vincent Caron and documents and witness statements which have recently surfaced showing that Caron, a CIA operative for more than 30 years prior to his 1990 death, has participated in all of the above events. The complaint also specifically states that Caron was the man who illegally took possession of Elaine Tyree's diaries shortly after her murder. The suit further alleges that Caron retrieved the diaries at the, quote, express direction, unquote, of George Bush, who served as CIA director in 1976 when the CIA drug flights, known as the Watchtower missions, took place. The initial filing for the suit indicates a direct evidentiary connection leading to Bush as part of the conspiracy. And by the way, the subsequent surveillance and blackmail operation was known to its participants as Operation Orwell. That alluded to in the earlier From the Wilderness article about Bill Tyree. Proceeding now. Far from being general in nature, the suit includes copious supporting material, names more than 25 banks, and lists more than 10 bank account numbers connected to the CIA's movement of monies generated from drug trafficking. The suit also indicates that, via witness testimony, some already included in the form of affidavits, there are witnesses capable of tying Bush to Caron and Caron to the diaries. In addition, the suit seeks 722 specific sets of records. According to Tyree's attorney, Ray Coleman of Attleboro, Massachusetts, quote, "The first round of subpoenas for records have already landed in Washington and elsewhere with a resounding thud," unquote. Subpoenas for records and statements already made by Defendant Tatum have been sent through the U.S. Marshals Service to Tatum, who is considered a friendly defendant, unquote, in the case. Tatum's whereabouts are currently unknown, but he has for several years published materials and documents denouncing the CIA and George Bush for their direct roles in smuggling drugs into the country and for engaging in other illegal activities. According to Coleman, Tatum's inclusion as a defendant is intended to, quote, "compel testimony which we believe Tatum wants to give, but which requires that Tatum have the protection afforded by a civil subpoena to do so." Then the next section is entitled The Massachusetts Connections. In civil and criminal trials in 1985 and 1987 against a former Ayer, Massachusetts police officer and a Massachusetts state trooper, the courts found that warrantless searches of the Tyree residence conducted immediately after the murder were illegal and that property taken in those searches, including the diaries and photographs showing Tyree in uniform, were it was illegally seized. The photographs showed Tyree with decorations and ratings the Army subsequently denied he had ever been awarded. The courts issued orders to police officials in the town of Ayer and Middlesex County to return the property, and one of the officers involved admitted liability and paid a judgment. The second officer paid a judgment on appeal. Continuing attempts were made by Tyree to recover the property, which the district attorney's office admitted had been removed without success. That is to say, the attempts to recover the property had been unsuccessful. Continuing. Inclusion of the Massachusetts Governor Paul Cellucci and the Attorney General Scott Harshbarger as defendants in the suit is based upon more than a pro forma issue of their roles as law enforcement officers in the state. Cellucci, by the way, that's C-E-L-L-U-C-I, Cellucci, the Republican appointed to serve out the balance of former Governor William Weld's term, has specifically ignored written appeals from Tyree for commutation of sentence and enforcement of his civil rights. His law partner in 1980, William Kittredge, defended Special Forces Trooper Eric Arhus, Arhus, A-A-R-H-U-S, who was also convicted in the murder and allegedly wielded the knife in a conspiracy with Tyree to collect insurance money. A sizable body of material, including affidavits, forensic evidence, and witness testimony, exists to show that neither Tyree nor Arhus were present when the murder was committed, and that another former Green Beret, William Peters, was the actual killer. By the way, again, I want to stress that I have no information incriminating any of the people mentioned in this article, nor does any of the stations that I broadcast this on. That having been said, let's continue with this vitally important story. The initial case against Tyree was initially dismissed by Judge James Killiam and subsequently refiled as a result of government pressure with the Massachusetts State Judicial Supreme Court. In a June 1998 documentary on A&E entitled Murder at Fort Devens, Judge Killiam again repeated his beliefs both that Tyree was innocent and that Peters was the real killer. Harshbarger, the current attorney general, served as Middlesex County DA, in which jurisdiction Tyree was originally prosecuted from 1984 to 1990. In addition, while district attorney in 1987, he defended Peters in a clear conflict of interest when Tyree's mother placed charges against him. As the district attorney, and later as Attorney General, Harshbarger had direct responsibility to comply with the court orders directing the return of the diaries and other personal property in the 1985 and 1987 civil cases. As far back as 1980, while the Tyree case was being prosecuted by then Middlesex D.A. John Droney, D-R-O-N-E-Y, Harshbarger had been hired as a special counsel by the selectmen of Ayer to investigate widespread corruption in the Ayer Police Department on charges which included theft. As a result of Harshbarger's investigations, several Ayer police were fired and faced criminal proceedings. It was these same Ayer police who searched Tyree's residence with the assistance of state troopers. And we're going to continue with this vitally important article from Mike Rupert's newsletter From the Wilderness in our next half-hour segment. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.